Committee come to order. This is the Senate State Affairs Committee. It is February 1, approximately 3:35 in the afternoon. The one item that we have listed for work today is Senate Bill 36. This is the second hearing on the bill. We do have a proposed committee substitute to come back before the committee. At this time, I'd like my staff person, Dave Stancliffe, to come forward. And Senator Wagner, a motion, please.
I would move to adopt a committee substitute for Senate Bill number 36, State Affairs.
The G version?
Yeah, the backslash G version.
There's no objection. We'll adopt that as our working document today. And Dave, if you would just walk us through the changes.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Dave Stancliffe, staff to Senator Terrio. And at the last meeting, there were several points in this bill that were discussed. And based on some of those points and suggestions, the following changes were made as part of the CS. On page 1, line 8, the deadline for application for absentee ballots has been changed from 7 to 10 days. And on page 2, a new section 2, lines 6 through 16, requires the division director to adopt new regulations as follows. The first caveat being that it would the new forms that would be sent out, if they weren't sent out by the division, would be the information that was requested on those forms would have to be no more than is required by the Division of Elections. Number two, ensures that all information on ballot request solicitations be concealed or kept private while in transit back to the division. And number three, requires absentee ballot request forms not sent out by the division to be authorized by the director or approved. Those seem to be the major components that rise to the level of wishing to be included in statute. Of course, some of the details would be addressed in the new regulations that were adopted by the division. And some of these, the management decisions would be included in those new regs that were adopted. Also discussed was what type of penalty would be appropriate. In the bill, in the new Section 3, there's established a Class C felony for a person who is convicted of interfering with voting for at least more than one instance. And Section 4 is a Class A misdemeanor if they're convicted in a first offense. The idea being that if a person didn't get the message the first time, perhaps the penalty should be stiffer the second time. I'll be glad to answer any other questions if I can, Mr. Chairman.
And just for the members' information, we do have Laura Glazer signed up to testify, and also Annette Kreitzer with the Lieutenant Governor's Office. If there are questions, just wanted to go over a couple of things. First of all, I had a question on sections 3 and 4. If you look up at the beginning of those sections, the A section says a person commits the crime, and then down in the new language says is a political group. So I wasn't sure how that worked when you talk about a person, but then you're talking about a group. The drafter did get back and said, well, the reference to a person up above is a single person or a group. You know, it's more than just a single person. And the question I had, well, was if a political group was found to be at fault, who would the fine be assessed against? And the drafter said that, or would there be any jail time? And the drafter came back with a response that said that because a group is a large body of people, you're not going to have jail time. It would be the courts could issue a fine, basically, against the group. Also, on section number 2, I think it's important that we do have some specific language in here that says the director shall adopt regulations, and the regulations need to cover these items that we've spelled out here in 1, 2, and 3. So I hope there's agreement on the committee on that. And then Are there any questions for Dave at this time?
Mr. Chair, or you may be able to answer also. On Section 3, the penalty component of the bill that has been added, the concern that I have is with this definition, I mean, political group or political party is defined elsewhere under this title. Political party means an organized group of voters that represents a political program that nominated a candidate for governor who received at least 3% of the total votes cast at any one of the last five preceding general elections for governor. It would seem to me that if we define political party that way, that what we're doing is we're providing for sanctions against major parties, but we may not be able to sanction, for example, the Republican Moderate Party. If, in fact, they engaged in this behavior. Similarly, when you talk about political group, there's a much longer definition of group under this party, but it seems to me that that definition of political group would, for example, mean that people for the ethical treatment of animals or trustees for Alaska or other groups may not be defined as a group, a political group, and that they could then engage in behavior that would otherwise be penalized if some other group was doing it. So I'm curious as to whether or not my impressions are correct, and if so, why we would want to exclude some people from the penalty component and not others.
Yeah, I think off the top of my head, Senator Elton, we have separated out those groups because I guess the thought was that they have a level of sophistication that they should know better, and they're sort of held to a higher standard. But if we want, I guess we could still have some broader language, or either that or a number five that would capture those smaller parties. I'm not sure exactly how it would be worded. Senator Wagner?
Chairman, are those words worth? We may be talking about something that is irrelevant. I don't know that the Republican Moderate Party is recognized as a party anymore. You had to have 3% of the vote to be recognized as a party, so they really aren't a political party.
And I think that's what Senator Elton is speaking to. Because they're not officially recognized, they would not fall under this category, but yet they might have an absentee ballot effort. I see Ms. Glazer has come forward, so that means she's just itching to jump into the fray.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Laura Glazer, Director, Division of Elections. The definition of political party and political group in 1560.010, political party means an organized group of voters that represents a political program, and then the language that Senator Elton read to you. In the division, a political group means a group organized of voters which represents a political program and does not qualify as a party. Our definition of group is where Republican moderates are. Those parties who are, because of the definition of a political party that fail to meet that test, the 3%, or elect a person who achieves 3%, they move into political group status. So those parties who no longer are a political party, so when Senator Elton raises a question about a smaller, we still call them the Republican Moderate Party. We call them the Green Party, Libertarian Party. But should they drop off, they become a group. So I can't speak to the legal definition, but the way the division sees group and party, that's the way we interpret that statute and have been directed at time. You know, when we inform a party when they've lost status and become a group.
Your interpretation is the combination of those two would cast the net wide enough to cover, have this section apply to the big parties and the smaller groups.
Senator Terrio, not speaking as an attorney, but that's the way we interpret that language for party status.
Senator Elton.
And during election.
Just 2 points, and Laura may be able to answer that. I mean, the definition that I've got is from AS 15-13-400, not 1560. So are they roughly similar, the descriptions?
Senator Elton, through the chair, members of the committee are probably more familiar with the differences between the APOC statute and the Division of Election statute. And so the 1513 is the definition, and I believe there's been some contention over the years over that of the two different definitions of political party that exist in the two. I think there was some work done to make them be the same, but I believe there's still a difference between 1513 and 1556.
And the second question, Mr. Chair, of Laura would be, how about groups then like Trustees for Alaska or PETA or State Chamber or other groups that may have an interest in increasing turnout or turnout of some voters? I mean, would they be covered under political group if they are not organized? I mean, if they're a long-term organization not organized around an election?
Senator Elton, through the chair, again, not without an attorney present, I'm not certain. I don't know how that would affect under our 1560 where it says a political group means a group of organized voters which represents a political program, but does not which does not qualify as a political party. So
it would seem to me, Mr. Chair, that language would preclude some groups, would preclude an increasingly popular kind of group, what's been known as the 527s, from coverage, if that's the case.
Further questions?
Chairman, this still has a further referral to judiciary, and if it were your intent to discover more about this definition, we could certainly do so between now and the time it reaches that committee. I believe, Senator Elton, are you?
I'm not. Senator French and
yes.
Senator Gass, I think. And we're—I mean, we've already started putting together a packet for them.
So. I want judiciary too.
Okay, Dave. Were there any other points that you thought needed to be covered?
That would be it.
Okay, and Laura, how about yourself? Would you like to speak to the 10 days, moving from 7 to 10 days? And I think that the committee needs to have an understanding of when your in-person early voting starts up, and to make sure that comfort level that we're not cutting off anybody's access to vote.
Mr. Chairman, and it was my intent to have a calendar laid out, and it's a dog ate my homework kind of story, so... we'll have to do this verbally. It was our request, and it was included in Senate Bill 66, the governor's bill, to move back the date, the last date to apply for an absentee ballot to 10 days prior to an election. And that's based on our working knowledge now of the fact that there were days where we received 7,000, another day where we received 11,000 applications on one day, all towards the end of that deadline, 7 days prior, where you had to do all of the checks that you want to believe are happening to assure that that is going to a registered voter, and then turn that around, get the ballot, and get it in the mail, and then make sure that it actually gets to the person. Of course, ideally, you'd want to even get it there before November 2nd, but a seven-day turnaround seemed almost impossible. It lasted an awful long time, and I'm sure it did, because nobody, including the lieutenant governors, I've had this discussion with the lieutenant governor. You want to give people the most opportunity when they have a change in their life to be able to apply and receive a ballot. But the alternatives that we have available in the state of Alaska are early voting begins at absentee voting sites across the state and in the supervisor's offices 15 days prior to an election. So you can actually go. If it's an absentee in-person vote, you vote your ballot and it's voted in a supervisor or AVO station. That's 15 days prior and until and through Election Day. So those sites are all available throughout the state. Absentee by fax is available 15 days prior. You can apply to receive a by fax ballot. So there are other alternatives. We aren't really tightening down or making, you know, Senator Elton had expressed concern about, you know, making it the most accessible. even with 10 days out in a by-mail application. I think what you're doing is you're not reducing the opportunity because it still exists in early voting and by fax. But now what you're doing is, I think, increasing the likelihood that people will have ballots, and I think sometimes that's a higher standard to meet than that you have access to request a ballot. I mean, you can request on the seventh day, but if in fact there's no way for the state to turn that around, have you really served the voter better, or isn't it a better improvement to say, you know, 10 days out, here are your other options. We advertise those. If we're asked, we'll advertise them more, and then increase the turnaround time.
And I think part of what we've got to do here is balance. You certainly want to encourage people to vote, but also your agency has a duty to make sure that the checks are done so that, you know, only valid people are getting to vote. And so it's preserving the sanctity of the election process. It's both of those. Encourage people to participate, but you got to have enough time to check to make sure that only the proper people are getting through the door. So, and both of those are important, I think, for the general public's feeling that we run fair elections in the state. So, and, any questions, Senator Elton?
Less a question, Mr. Chair, than an observation, then maybe Laura can respond to it. It seems to me that, I understand, you know, the time crunches, but it seems to me that there are two ways to deal with that. One would be, as is suggested here in this draft, would be to move it back to 10 days. The other would be more staff, so that you reduce the potential turnaround time that you might otherwise have. And that's an observation that you may wish to respond to.
Senator Elton, through the chair, that is an alternative, but I think the better alternative is more staff and 10 days. We could have what you want is that voter to have that ballot the most amount of time possible. And 10 days is going to ensure that if we have more staff, and even with less staff, that they're going to have more time. You just increase 3 days for the state to respond and get that ballot to the voter. And I just look at it as a win-win situation.
The voter knows up front, you know, that with 10 days, there's a very good possibility they're going to get their ballot in the mail enough time to cast the vote. But where we are right now with the 7 days, it's nip and tuck whether they're going to make it.
Mr. Chairman, there were many people that even when we explained your ballot arrived on a day when there were 7,000 applications and it's the last day to apply, you know, we'll do our best to turn around at 7 days. They expected that to happen. And I would just rather be the one that said, you know, it's 10 days and, I got a crew of people that worked really hard to turn those around, and I think the 3 days would make a big difference.
This is a question and not an observation, and I wish I could remember. I mean, how far back from Election Day do the voter pamphlets get mailed out? And what I'm trying to get at is what's the period of time between when voter pamphlets are mailed out and this 10-day deadline?
Statutorily, Senator Elton, to the chair, statutorily we're required to get the voter pamphlets out 22 days prior to an election. That means in the mail 22 days. That doesn't mean received by the voter 22 days prior. Previously, historically, when we reviewed the official election pamphlet, we found that there was application for absentee voting in there. And it was my decision to remove it this year because it was often received by a voter after the time had, this had been going on for years, that they would get an absentee by mail application included in their official election pamphlet, and it served no purpose because the time had elapsed, the deadline had passed already. So we found that when we hit the 22-day mark, that Anchorage, again, being a main mail center, those people were getting it within the next day of us knowing that the vendor had them in the mail, and then it trickles into 3 to 4 days. So you're talking probably 15 to 12 days prior to an election, the election pamphlet is arriving. And that's a very tight deadline in itself, because we don't get the information nor the election certified, you know, and then we're going to a massive printing production prior to the election to meet that 22-day deadline.
The reason I'm asking, Mr. Chair, is I think that the experience of many of my neighbors is they start thinking seriously about the election at the time they get the voter pamphlet. And if they get the voter pamphlet, we move back 10 days. There's a foreshortened period of time in which they can request a ballot by mail. But it's more of an observation.
Do we have further questions? Okay. We have the backslash G version before us as the working document. Do we have any amendments? And then we do, let's turn our attention to the fiscal note. It's just the one fiscal note, zero fiscal note. That with no amendments, what's the rule of the committee? Senator Wagner.
I'd like to move, make a motion to move CS for Senate Bill number 36 with attached fiscal notes. Committee of referral. With individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill, the State Affairs version of Senate Bill 36. We'll move to judiciary and individual recommendations and the one fiscal note. And that wraps up our meeting for today. Thank you, Matt.
Maybe you have